standing by, and welcome to Wyndhurst Energy PLC preliminary results investor call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. There'll be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you'll need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you this conference is being recorded today, Friday the 14th of February, 2014. Now, to the conference over to your speaker today, Sir Robert Wilson. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning to you all, and welcome to this, our first results conference call. I'm Robert Wilson, the Chairman of REL, and I'm joined today by Pierre Lapeyre and David Lushen, who I'm sure that most of you know are the originating founders of Riverstone Holdings, directors of Riverstone International Limited, who are the investment managers, as well as being directors of Riverstone Energy. I'm also joined by Ken Ryan, who's Managing Director at Riverstone Holdings. Now, I'm pleased to say that in the rather short period since our listing, we do have some positive progress to report. I'll take you through some of the key financial highlights before handing over to Pierre, who's going to expand on the investment strategy and the portfolio. We'll then take some questions from you, and we'll field those between us. Now, as you know, REL was admitted to trading on the LSE last October after what we regard as a successful capital raising of just short of $1.25 billion, which is one of the largest energy sector IPOs for some time and the biggest in fact since April 2010. Now, at the end of December, REL had a net asset value of $16.04 a share. I'm putting these figures in dollars rather than pounds because effectively that is the currency of our business, and that has been unchanged since the IPO in US dollar terms. As you know, Riverstone Holdings actually absorbed the costs of the issue itself. So that is substantially unchanged since the IPO in dollar terms. There has been a small adverse movement against us in currency terms. As previously indicated, and I think it's well understood by investors in the company, this is a long-term capital growth proposition, and as such, it's not expected to regularly paying any dividends in the short to medium term. Any cash generated by investments is going to be reinvested to grow our net asset value. Now, over the period since our IPO, REL has made two commitments of $100 million in Liberty Resources II LLC and $50 million in Eagle Energy Exploration LLC, and in the latter it has the right to commit up to an additional $50 million. This is obviously consistent with our investment strategy, with both investments targeting opportunities in the North American E&P areas. The investments are with proven management team with whom Riverstone has partnered successfully before. Now, we see potential to achieve long-term growth in partnership with Riverstone's proven management team. The industry benefits from what we all here regard as very strong long-term fundamentals, particularly but not only in the North American market. The North American shale revolution and recent success rates in deep water exploration illustrate, we think, some very attractive potential opportunities, and maybe particularly as some of the larger oil companies in this area are seeking to sharpen up and divest some parts of their portfolio. Anyway, with this, I'd like to pass over to Pierre, who's going to talk you through the investment commitments we've made so far in a little more depth. So over to you, Pierre.
Okay, thank you, Bob, and good morning, everyone. We have evaluated a number of exploration and production and midstream investments on behalf of the company since its inception. So far, as Bob mentioned, we have two exploration and production investments that have been committed, and we'll touch on each of those in turn here in our discussion. Furthermore, we expect to complete an additional 3 to 6 investments during the calendar year 2014 at ranges of investment for REL that are between 50 and 200 million U.S. dollars. Generally, when David, I, or Bob speak about our investments, it'll be in U.S. dollars for the reasons that Bob mentioned earlier. In November, we announced the company's first investment as REL and Riverstone Fund 5 invested in Liberty Resources 2, which is led by Chris Wright. Separately, Riverstone Funds have previously partnered with Chris and his operations team in 2010 to build Liberty 1, an upstream E&P company similar to Liberty 2, which over a period of 3 years built a material portfolio of assets in the Bakken Shale in the United States. These assets were ultimately sold to the U.S. independent oil and gas company, Kodiak Oil and Gas, which resulted in a gross IRR of 28% and a gross multiple on our invested capital of 1.7 times. Liberty 2 will again be focusing in the Bakken Shale and apply the management team's proprietary expertise in well completions to both proven and primarily undeveloped opportunities in this resource play. REL has committed $100 million U.S. to Liberty 2, and indeed 2 weeks ago we announced a transaction whereby Liberty 2 would be acquiring producing and development assets in the Bakken and Three Forks plays in North Dakota for a total purchase price of $455 million. We expect that REL's share of this investment will be approximately $55 to $65 million, depending on the final amount of the debt financing achieved by Liberty 2. So that's roughly drawing down half to two-thirds of REL's $100 million commitment to that investment. This is an exciting investment from our perspective, which fits perfectly and is very consistent with the Liberty management team's strategy and expertise, and the investment is expected to formally close in March, so in just another month or so. Separately, in December, REL and Fund 5 invested in Eagle Energy 2, which is led by Steve Antry. Similarly, other Riverstone funds have previously partnered with Steve Antry and his team back in 2009, in which we together built a substantial position in the Hunton and Mississippi Lawn plays of northern Oklahoma and southern Kansas. Eagle One was previously sold to Midstates Petroleum in 2012, and it resulted in a gross IRR of 57% and a gross multiple of our invested capital of 4.1 times. Eagle 2 will follow a very similar strategy, focusing on accumulating acreage for both delineation and development in the Mississippi Lime play, and REL has committed $50 million to Eagle 2, which, as Bob said, we also have a right to commit an additional $50 million if that capital is needed, for a total potential commitment of $100 million U.S. dollars to this investment as well. So from our perspective, we're off to a good start with these two investments, which represent combined $200 million into high-quality upstream opportunities in North America within just 3 months since the IPO. If you were to look at our current investment pace, and I'm sure the pipeline and backlog of opportunities that we'll touch on in our discussion, REL's IPO proceeds may be fully committed within as short as 18 months of the IPO, which is well ahead of the 24 to 36 months that we outlined in the prospectus and on the roadshow. We are working on a number of other attractive investment opportunities comparable to the ones we just described, and we expect some of them will be ready for execution over the coming months. The deal pipeline remains as exciting and as strong as we have seen it during our time in the industry, driven, among other things, by the ongoing pressures of the capital budgets of many of the E&P companies in North America, really as a result of the significantly higher capital intensity of developing unconventional upstream assets and increased equity market focus and discipline on these companies being able to essentially grow within their own cash flow, leading to a very robust asset rationalization activity in North America. With that, I'd like to pass it back to you, Bob, for any other remarks that you might have.
Well, thank you, Pierre. I'm going to open up this call to questions in just a moment, but I hope that you all agree that we've got off to a very quick start in terms of identifying investment opportunities, and the projects which Pierre has described do fit squarely with the strategy which we talked about at the time of the IPO. And it is also said quite a few further potential opportunities are under active consideration. So I think we can take quite a little bit of encouragement from this very early start to Riverstone's life as a public company in the UK market. But with that, I'd like to open the floor now to your questions. So please, any questions you might want to throw to us, or in particular perhaps to Pierre or David.
Thank you, sir. We'll now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Once again, that's star 1 if you wish to ask a question. We have a question from David Hazy of Marylebone Partners. Please ask your question.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen, and congratulations on your first set of results. Could I ask, in terms of the speed with which, once you've made a commitment to a group of entrepreneurs, the money is actually drawn down, whether the announcement we've seen in respect of the Liberty Resources is broadly typical of what we should see, or is that sort of faster or slower than usual?
Thank you. That's a very pertinent question. David, could I ask you to respond to that, please?
Sure. I think if you look at our history at Riverstone, it is usually 3 to 4 years to draw down the entire commitment. So if you look at Liberty, you'd say it's happening a little more rapidly than would be our typical average. But you know, these transactions are episodic. They vary very widely. And it just happened that the opportunity, the $455 million offer that Pierre outlined, came along very rapidly after we reconstituted the Liberty team as Liberty 2. I don't expect that to be typical. I think the more typical process in a build-up, we don't always do build-up. Sometimes we make acquisitions where the entire commitment is invested at the front end. But on a build-up, I think somewhere around the 3-year mark is more typical.
Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from Stephen Walker of Ashcourt Rowan. Please ask your question.
Yes, hi. Probably a question for Pierre here. On Liberty 2, I think the current production rate is somewhere around 4,000 barrels. What kind of potential flow rates do you think those assets have as you sort of build them out?
Well, I think generally speaking, when we look at upstream investment opportunities, both on the development and or acquisition side, that we're looking to ultimately more than double our production. That can vary from company to company, sometimes more, sometimes less. This particular acquisition has both, as David described, a lot of what we do is build up. Sometimes those are acquiring existing assets that have current production that we think that we can enhance and improve on, and sometimes it is acreage for development. This one in particular has both. So it would be a little early for us to be signaling to the public market exactly what we think, but you can use the rough guideline of our desire to more than double current production as a bit of a guideline.
Okay.
Thank you.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. Another question from Stephen English of Blankstone Sinton. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. It's probably a question for Sir Robert. What plans, if any, do you have to try and address this discount to NAV in the market?
Well, the answer is, at this particular point, we don't have any plans. This is obviously something that we're going to be watching very closely as the year progresses, and obviously we're also hoping that as we are in a position to show more of the sort of investments that we're going to be making, that this discount will perhaps be eroded in any case, naturally, by the market. But this is something we're going to be watching very carefully. You can rest assured of that.
Would a part of that, are you trying to get any more brokers to try and cover the stock, or is it you waiting for the ramp up of investment before you get them on board?
Well, obviously, we're not going to get a lot of analyst coverage of our business until we've got more of a portfolio for them to take a close look at. But we are going to be making an appointment sooner rather than later in terms of our brokers for the future. And I do anticipate that there will be increasing coverage of the business by analysts as the year progresses.
Thank you very much.
The next question comes from Anish Kapadia of TPH. Please ask your question.
Hi, good morning. A question on just the industry conditions at the moment. We've got kind of relatively high WTI prices, high gas prices at the moment. Just wondering how much, in terms of buyer expectations, that's inflating prices, how difficult it is in terms of being able to compete in that kind of market. And also, I suppose, the impact of the equity market appears to be paying a bit more than the private market. If you could just talk about a few of those trends.
David, could I ask you to field that one, please?
Sure. If I understood your question, I think the last part was to ask about the public market versus the third-party market or the strategic market. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. Well, you know, if you look at the way that our returns have been derived historically, relatively little of that is based on commodity prices. I mean, obviously they go up and down, and any of you that were participants in the marketing process last fall know that we hedge aggressively when we buy assets. And my comments are about the point at which we buy, not at which we commit, but actually buying assets, let's say in one of these buildups or doing an actual buyout. We're going to aggressively hedge commodity prices and derive our return more from operations, as Pierre said, by doubling or better on production and by lowering costs. We don't see any change in the last few months in our ability to do this. You know, you have to remember that the North American, which is our primary marketplace, E&P market, and I think you're talking more E&P than you are midstream, is incredibly diverse, incredibly rich in the number and the size of opportunities that come to us on a regular basis. You know, that's the proof of the pudding in that is the fact that we've already made two commitments, one large investment, and we have, you know, as I think Pierre said, five or six soon to come that we would expect to get completed in 2014. We don't see any change in that as a result of commodity prices going up and down. The mix may change to some degree, and certainly some of the areas that I'm not going to get real specific here, but some of the shale basins or some of the offshore basins that may become more highly valued or are less likely to go into the near-term commitments that we make. But I think generally that's that really nothing has changed here. As to the public valuation versus private, you know, if you looked at the current portfolio at Riverstone, we certainly see instances where the public markets probably are valuing assets at higher prices than the private market. But we deal at a size level that in the food chain of energy that is so relatively small that the companies we're dealing with oftentimes don't have the opportunity to go public, you know, in their current configuration. You know, that's more likely to be a market we exit through than it is one we're really competing with. And I guess the last thing I would say is that, just thinking out loud, I can't think of a situation where we've missed an opportunity because of the high public valuation today.
David, the only thing I would add, which I think is a little bit of a derivative of your comment, is that one thing we are definitely seeing over the last, say, 6 to 9 months is that there has been, in our view, a very stark shift in the public equity markets in terms of what portfolio managers are looking to see out of the companies that go public or the companies that they ultimately invest in, and that is tangible, sustainable growth without having to constantly come to market for more capital. And that has had a very positive effect on deal flow in North America because people, as I think most people on this phone call know well, are under a fair amount of capital budget pressure in terms of cash they have versus opportunities they have. And that has led to a material uptick in the amount of asset sale or asset rationalization activity in our business, which provides great opportunities for our existing portfolio companies or new ones to both joint venture or make acquisitions of attractive assets from others.
Okay, thank you. I have a second question on just in terms of your view on the international E&P market versus the U.S. E&P market. It feels like certainly the international E&P market is very much a buyer's market out there. The integrated retrenching as with some of the U.S. E&Ps. Do you see much value over there? Is that something that you would expect you to look at a bit more closely?
Yeah, were you there?
Sure,
I'm happy to. Go ahead, David.
The vast majority of what we have in the current pipeline is in North America, and that goes back to what I call that diversity and richness of opportunities, that which Pierre added a little bit more detail to. We look at opportunities internationally all the time, but I don't see that as playing a greater role in the kinds of things that will go into REL in the future. That business is, again, very episodic. Our participation in that business historically has largely been on the exploration side in, you know, basins like in Brazil and Africa. I would expect that to continue, but be very episodic. There are also opportunities, as you mentioned, that are, you know, caused by this strategic repositioning of assets by some of the bigger companies, but we're going to be a relatively small participant, I think, in that overall. The one other thing I might add, which is part of the explanation of why the business is so focused on North America today, is if you look at how these public companies are valued and how what their opportunity set is, as Pierre mentioned a minute ago, so many of them are opportunity-rich, cash-flow constrained, and are really trying to high-grade their portfolios and look to develop that as rapidly as they can. That creates two opportunities for us, and two that I think we're seeing in spades today. One is the high-bond assets that we wouldn't otherwise see in order to fund the capital program, and two, they allow companies like us to joint venture with them in exploiting that opportunity set. That's somewhat new, and that's very exciting for us. But we're seeing both of those in the portfolio right now, and that's largely North America again.
Okay. And just one final one, if I could, on just some more specifics on the Liberty assets in the Williston. I was just wondering if you could provide, in terms of the inventory, a breakdown between the Three Forks and the Middle Bakken, give some more detail on the well type curve assumptions, the drilling program, and how delineated the acreage is that you bought.
Well, Dave, you want me to talk about that?
Sure.
I think at this stage what we would do, that information will be forthcoming, but I think we would prefer to do that once we formally close, which will be in March, as we said. So I think you can look to that in subsequent discussions or calls as we roll out essentially our acquisition plan, if you will, for those assets. But it would be a little preliminary for us to do that at this stage.
Okay, sure. I understand. Thank you.
Thanks, Pierre. More questions, please.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone.
Okay, there doesn't seem to be anything further at this stage. Is that right?
No further questions at this time, sir.
Okay. Well, look, thank you very much for joining this call. This is going to be the first of very many in years to come. You probably gathered that both Pierre and David are calling for into this from home in the States. So if there were some slight lags in the responses in terms of timing, that's the reason for it. But thank you very much for your interest, and I hope that we're going to continue this contact with you when we come back with some more details of future investment proposals. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye-bye. And that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.